All right. Good morning. We're starting in chapter 14, pasuk 25. I believe that we did get as far as this. What really has happened up until now? Avshalom, we remember, had Amnon murdered, and because of that, he fled away to the king of Geshur. It is Yoav ben Tzeruya who was able to get the king to agree to invite Avshalom back. There was a whole story with the woman, the Isha HaTekoit, the woman from Tekoa whom he sent to influence the king to bring Avshalom back. Avshalom has been returned to Eretz Yisrael, however, in Pasuk 24 it said, Vayomer HaMelech Yisov al Beitah, the king said, let him turn to his house, Ufanai lo yireh, he shall not see my face. Vayisov Avshalom al Beitah, Upnei HaMelech lo ra'ah. Avshalom went to his house, but he didn't see the king. That means the prodigal son has returned, but the relationship between himself and the king is still a strained one. All right. The next few psukim are going to be the introduction to, of course, one of the great tragedies in the life of David. And we're going to have to understand this tragedy. There are a number of tragedies already. What has happened now since the story of David and Bathsheba? What has happened? So we had the story of Amnon raping his sister Tamar, which created, of course, a rift in the family. It was a blot on the family of David, which, of course, created the enmity between Avshalom and Amnon, which in the end brought about the murder of Amnon. Amnon is the oldest member of the family. It's really the one who is the heir to the throne has been killed by his brother. His brother now is going to become the story, Avshalom. Now, I think what's very important for us to realize is that in all of these stories, it's all taking place on two levels. Human beings are acting out of their out of purpose, out of their own interests, but at the same time, all of this is in some way, I'm not sure which word to use, I would not say orchestrated by God, but there is a divine intent and purpose over here. The purpose, of course, is the punishment of David. Though he had done tshuva, and though we explained that the story of David and Bathsheba was not pure or impure, unmitigated adultery, it was not that, but for David Melech Yisrael to have made that kind of mistake, he's going to suffer, and he's going to be punished, and the punishment is going to come from within his own home. We had already the story of the child that was born and that died. But then when we get, for example, to the story of Amnon and Tamar, in the story of Amnon and Tamar, we've just begun. Don't begin till you see the whites of their eyes. Alright. We've just begun. So things are happening on two levels. What this really brings us to, of course, is to the great question, man's bechira, man's free will, and God's foreknowledge, yediya u'bechira. God knows that all of these things are going to happen. God is the one who has, for all intents and purposes, said that you are going to suffer, you're going to be punished, and that punishment is going to come from your own home, and it happens. But despite that, people act out of their own impulses and their own motives. Amnon is not coerced into the act of rape. In a sense, we will never be able to intellectually resolve the problem of Yediyah and Bechira, God's foreknowledge and man's choice, but everybody here is acting out of their own choice. It is not as though the hand of God is determining them. And I believe it's for that reason the next few psukim, which are going to be the introduction to the rebellion of Avshalom, the next few psukim want to point this out. Now, because the next few psukim are going to tell us what it is that brings Avshalom to rebel. In other words, what are his motives, his interests? What is it that moves him? And all of these are, we'll see. The pasuk is going to tell us that Avshalom acts out of absolute free will. He has made a decision. And it's not a decision that he has made impulsively. This is a decision that is cooking and percolating within him for years. And he has patience. He has tremendous, tremendous patience. He plans every step. We're going to watch a plan of rebellion now that clearly, clearly was something that was in the making for years. In Avshalom's mind, we don't have a clue how long it was. So that we're not talking about somebody who, because God has determined him, acts on impulse in one single instant of time. Watch. We're in chapter 14, pasuk 25. Like Avshalom, there was no man who was as good looking as him b'chol Yisrael, in all of Israel. Lahalel ma'od, his looks were that good that they were very praiseworthy. The kind that people in what the pasuk is really saying is there is such a thing as absolute beauty that all people see as. I shouldn't use the word beauty, but that's the word that the pasuk uses. He was very handsome. This is not written about anybody. From the very soles of his feet until the top of his head, there was no blemish. He was a perfect human being. Now obviously, a perfect human being is one who is prone to conceit, pride, arrogance. This is all, this pasuk 25 is all external. All external. Why did you think otherwise? You have some pshat over there? You know why I'm taking him seriously? Because there is a pasuk that uses this kind of language, and it's talking about the spiritual makeup of the people. No. I may be making a mistake, but listen, we're an intimate group over here. If I make a mistake, you know, either I'll cover up or erase it. All right, not the same word, but in the first chapter of Sefer Yeshayahu, it describes how sinful the Jewish people are. Hoy goy chayte am keved avon. I love this pasuk. It's the third pasuk in Yeshayahu. One of the reasons why I like it so much. I mean, I was just in Toronto with my wife. Came in now. We were going to wait for you, but we're in a restaurant, and a fellow, first I didn't remember, comes over to me, and he tells me, he looks at me, and he says, Hoy goy chayte am keved avon zer amireim bonim mashchisim. No, niatsu et kedosh Yisrael nazaru achar. That's the third pasuk in Yeshayahu. He had been a student of mine 30 years earlier, more than 30 years, and I taught him this pasuk. He never forgot the pasuk. I don't know if he knows another thing, but he remembers this pasuk. It's Yeshayahu talking about a sinful people, and when he wants to describe the sinful people, so in pasuk 6 of Yeshayahu he says, mikaf regel vaad rosh ein bo miton. Mikaf regel, on the bottom of the foot, ad rosh, until the head, ein bo miton, there isn't one organ that is complete. Petza, chabura, makotria, there are all sorts of wounds and lesions and Petza, chabura, makotria, lo zoru, lo chuboshu, lo rukha b'shemen, and nothing has been done with all of these wounds. They haven't been anointed, they haven't been bound or band-aided, nothing has been done. All right, so that's why when you asked about whether the pasuk is talking about a physical description of Avshalom or it's talking about a spiritual one, so for a moment I hesitated. You see, because here we have a spiritual description of the Jewish people, mikaf raglo, mikaf, yeah, from foot until head.
But it's also that there was that he was a non-Jew.
Rachel, the other reason why I thought that pasuk 25 is talking about a physical description of Avshalom is because the next pasuk, I believe, is a spiritual description. And the next pasuk, precisely what you said, u'begalcho et rosho, when he would cut his hair, v'hoyom yiketz yamim, la'yamim asher yikaleach, there are all sorts of pshatim. Most say that he would take a haircut once a year. He grew his hair very long. The hair were very beautiful. And when he would cut his hair, ki chaved alav, when it had become heavy upon him, the gilcho, and he cut it, the shakal atzar, or so, he weighed the hair on his head, matayim shkolim be'evan hamelech, 200 shekel according to the stone of the king. But what according to the Mefarshim that dealt with it, it was about 3 kilo, 6 pounds. Now, there's something, this pasuk has to be understood on two levels. Yes, our rabbis say that he was a nazir. And the halacha by a nazir, in other words, a nazir is one who has taken a vow to say, Hareini nazir. This was an act of piety. Yet there was something about this piety that had gone wrong because his hair was very beautiful as well. So here we have the in a sense, the spiritual stature of the man. Yes. That one is not negative. By Shoal, it's not negative.
No, it's written with the low hayah. In other words, instead of he was, it's like
that nobody else.
I hear. In other words, it's written in the, not that he was the most beautiful, but that there was none like him in Israel. No, I'll tell you why I'm not ready to accept that, because there are other places where we have this kind of structure and it's positive. For example, the day that Yehoshua says Shemesh Begivon Dom V'Yareach Be'Eim HaKayalon, when he stops the sun and the moon in their paths, it says Lo Hayah, there was no day like that. I don't remember the exact word. I think it says Lo Hayah Yom Kamo Lishmoa Hashem Bekol Ish. There was no day like it that God listened to the words of a man. Now the idea, let's take a look. What does it say by Adoniyahu ben Chagit? Didn't we learn the first perek in Sefer Melachim Aleph? That was in Haftarah. First perek in Melachim Aleph, it says about Adoniyahu ben Chagit who rebels against his father when his father is nearly on his deathbed. I should always have at home, I always have a complete Tanakh with me. Here, in the first chapter of Melachim Aleph. First chapter of Melachim Aleph, it says, if Adoniyahu ben Chagit is the one, mitnasei leimar, he was raising and uplifting himself, saying, Ani emloch, I will be king. It's good to learn these psukim because we're going to see how a similar story is being told here. Adoniyahu ben Chagit made chariots and riders, v'chamishim ish, rotzim l'ponov, and 50 people running before him. V'lo'atzavo aviv miyaviv yom av lemar. His father never upset him by saying to him, madua kocha asita, why did you do such and such? Father never disciplined him. And then it says, v'gamhu tov toar ma'od. He was also very good looking. V'oto yolda acharei Avshalom. His mother gave birth to him after Avshalom's mother had given birth to Avshalom. Now I imagine when it says V'gam hu, he is also good looking, why does it say in the first chapter of Melachim Aleph he's also good looking? So Rashi explains, because Avshalom was good looking, and the next one to rebel against his father is the one who is next in line to be king. So that means one heir to the throne is killed by the second. Amnon is killed by Avshalom. Avshalom is now going to rebel and he is going to be killed. Adoniyahu ben Chagit is going to rebel and he's also Tov Tawar, he's also good looking. Huh? Very good. No, she's right. This is two good points. You get two stars today. About David, what was the description of David? He was Yefei Mareh Admoni Arayta Yefei Enayim. Yeah, yeah. But they describe, he's the only one that we have a description of every part of him.
Yeah.
David also was good looking. He is Admoni im Yefei Enayim. Listen, the Gemara says, Kala, that Einah Yafos, Kol Gufa Einot Tzvicha B'dika. A Kala has beautiful eyes, I don't have to check the rest of her. If it says about David that he had beautiful eyes, it means he was beautiful all over. All right. Vayivoldu, let's go for Vayivoldu Avshalom Shlosha Panim Ubat Achat Ushma Tamar. Her name was also Tamar. That means, by the way, this could be a good Chidon HaTanach question. How many Tamars do you know of in Tanakh? We now know three Tamars. The wife of Yehuda, right? Tamar, who is the sister of Amnon. And now we have a Tamar she wasn't the sister of Amnon. She was really the sister of Avshalom. And Avshalom now has a daughter, and it seems that he names his daughter the same name. He gives his daughter the same name that his of his sister. He haita isha yifat mar'a. She was a very beautiful. This beauty goes through the family, and it becomes a frightening, destructive force. Unbelievable, one. A destructive force. Now the Malbim over here says something. Take a look in chapter 18, just for a moment. Chapter 18, Pasuk 18. Take a look. Chapter 18, Pasuk 18. V'Avshalom lakach. Avshalom had taken, or he had. He took himself, and what he did was Vayatzev lo bechayav et matzevet asher beheimat hamelech. He made a memorial for himself in his lifetime. Ki amar, because he said, Einli ben, I have no child. Bavur haskir shemi, in order that my name should be remembered. It's still there. Vayikro lo matzevet al shemo, he called that structure by his name. Vayikro lo, he called it Yad Avshalom. Ad Hayom Hazeh. Yad Avshalom is right there. Ad Hayom Hazeh. What do you mean he doesn't have a child? The Pasuk just now tells us that he had three sons and a daughter. They must have died. Says the Malbim, they must have died. Do you understand? We're talking about an Avshalom now who is a tragic figure. He's a tragic figure. He's beautiful. He obviously he has a tremendous amount of charisma. We see that charisma by Adoniyahu ben Chagid, and we're going to see it over here by Avshalom. So here, when the prophet tells us that he had three children and one daughter, it also means that there was great tragedy in his life. Vayeshev Avshalom b'Yerushalayim shnatayim yamim, and Avshalom lived in Yerushalayim 2 years. Upnei hamelech lo ra'ah, he didn't see the face of the king. 2 years now that he is at home and he doesn't see the king. Yishlach Avshalom and Yoav. Avshalom sent a message to Yoav. Lishloach oto al ha-melech, that Yoav should arrange that Avshalom should be sent to the king. You know, what Avshalom wants is that Yoav, who was the one that brought him back, Yoav is the one who made sure that he was returned, let Yoav now get him to be presented before the king. Yoav did not want to come to Avshalom. In other words, Avshalom invited or ordered him to come to his house, and Yoav didn't come. By Yishlach Od Shenit, Avshalom sent another message. And he didn't want to come. By Yomer Elavodav, he told his servants, Re'u Chelkat Yoav El Yadi, below Sham Sodim, take a look. The land of Avshalom, of Yoav, is right next to mine. And he has barley. Sodim is barley? Barley growing there. I never get that straight. I mean, Avneyev Ez Mishan, I'll get Chitim and Sorim straight. Lechu v'hatzituhu ba'esh, go and ignite it with fire. V'yatzitu avde Avshalom et hachelka ba'esh, the servants of Avshalom went ahead and they burned down the field of Yoav. By the way, this is the second time that we have unquestioning servants who do precisely... No, by Avshalom himself. He told his servants to not to be afraid of anybody and to kill Amnon, and they killed him. And now this is the second time. He tells them, go burn down. Nobody questions. His servants don't question of Shlomo, huh?
They're following orders.
They are following orders. But they are following him. They are Avadam. Vayomer Avshalom al Yoav. Vayokam Yoav. Vayovo el Avshalom habayta. Yoav got up and he came to the house of Avshalom. Vayomer elav and he said to him, Lama tzitu avadekot achel kashel libaish. Why did your servants burn down my piece of land? They fight. What is interesting, I have a feeling that Avshalom wanted them to leave all sorts of clues and traces. They are not even doing it in a manner where they plan to conceal or hide it. So Yoav finally comes. Vayomer Avshalom al Yoav, Avshalom said to Yoav, Hinei shalachti elecho lemar, behold, I sent to you saying, Bo hena, come here. Ve'eshlecho otcha el hamelech lemar, I want to send you to the king to say, now watch, what's happening over here is Avshalom is talking to the Ramatkal, to the commander-in-chief. And do you know what kind of language he's talking to him?
Condescendingly.
And more than that, as if he is the melech. I wanted you to come here so that you should, to send you to the king saying, La bati mi gishur, tovli od anisham. The message that I wanted to send to the king was, what purpose was there in my coming home from Gishur? It was better if I would still be there. To come here, and what has Yerushalayim turned into for me? Yerushalayim, in a sense, he feels like he's under house arrest. He's persona non grata. He is the heir to the throne, and the king won't even see him. Va'ata ere pnei hamelech. Now I want to see the face of the king. V'in yesh bi avon v'hemitani. If there is any sin in me, let him put me to death. Yoav came to the king by Yagilo and he told him, by Yikra el Avshalom, the king called Avshalom, by Yavo el Amelech, and he came to the king. By Yishtach olo al apav aratzol lefnei Amelech, he bowed down on his face to the ground before the king. By Yishak Amelech l'Avshalom, the king kissed Avshalom. Let's just go over all of the elements of this introduction. Here is an introduction. These psukim from Pasuk 25 through 33, these psukim are the introduction to the steps that are going to be taken. He's very good looking. I'm ready to add, on the basis of this last pasuk that we just learned, that precisely what happened with Adoni Yehu ben Chagit happened with him, which was nothing. The king didn't admonish him. From the story of the murder, we haven't heard once that the king admonishes Avshalom.
He didn't admonish Amnon either.
Exactly. What's going on with David? I have difficulty. I don't know yet what's going on with him. Some of the Mepharshim, I mean, and it's true, some of the Mepharshim feel that the king throughout is manifesting weakness. He is manifesting an inability to act and act in a determined fashion. And the reason for it is because he has been told that he's going to be punished and that the suffering is going to come from within his family. This in a sense weakens the spirit of David, and David is not able to function as he had functioned all of his life. He had always functioned with a great deal of leadership and strength. Doesn't have it. I wouldn't be a bit surprised. That's part of the Onesh itself. He had acted with a great deal of determination and speed when he saw Bathsheba. Didn't stop for a moment. Sent men to check, find out who she is, sends for her, they hurry, they bring her, she comes, she goes home. He moved quite quickly when he dealt with Uriah. Now he has lost the ability to function with such speed and with such determination. Yes, Ria?
Perhaps time for something that's like you raised a child. Like a Cinderella boy.
Avshalom said to the king, Eilchonova Ashalim et Nidri Ashenodati Lashem Bechevron. Let me go and pay the vow that I had made to God in Hebron. I had vowed that I was going to bring a sacrifice. King Neder Nadar Abdachan, he explains, because your servant has made a vow, Beshivdi B'Geshur Ba'Aram, when I lived in Geshur, which is near Aram, Lema is so saying, Im Yashav Yeshiveni Hashem Yerushalayim, if God will bring me back to Yerushalayim, V'avadeti et Hashem, I will serve Him. What's the service? The service of Hashem is to bring a sacrifice. What did God say to Moshe at the snare? When you take them out of Egypt, Yavduni al Hahar Hazeh, they will serve me on this mountain. And what was the service? They brought sacrifices before God. Remember all of the discussions between Paro and Moshe. Moshe says we're going to have to go. Binarenu uzkenenu, our young and our old. Bitzonenu uvikarenu, we have to take our sheep and our cattle because we don't know what God is going to require of us until we get there. So he wants to go. He wants to go bring the sacrifice. Vayamalo Hamelech, the king told him, Len b'shalom, go in peace, vayakom vayelech Chevrona, and he went, he got up and he went to Chevron. Why is Chevron chosen? That's where David's Malchus started, which means that Chevron represents the city where kingdom begins. He's going now to Chevron in order to begin his kingdom. There are others who say that there was a great Mizbeach. There was an altar in Chevron. There are others who say he's going back home. He was birthplace. He was born in Chevron. Remember, there were children, Pesukim said earlier, a few chapters earlier, there were children that were born to David in Chevron, and then there were children that were born in Yerushalayim. Avshalom was born in Chevron. L'havdil, what it reminds me of is most presidential hopefuls go to their hometown in order to announce that they're throwing their hat into the presidential race, right? You know, it's already part of the whole act, you know. You go to Little Rock or you go to some other Hashlugan, a little place in America, surrounded by childhood friends who went with you to high school and to Gun, and most probably you have your Gun in it, you understand, standing side by side of you. I knew then from his finger painting that he's someday going to be a great president. So there's the idea of returning to his birthplace, returning to his roots. I mean, obviously there's something else involved. He does not want to begin the rebellion in Yerushalayim. If there's any power and strength that remains to David, that power is all centered in Yerushalayim. So he's going to Hebron. A number of other points. There's the Gemara says you should never tell anybody Leich Bishalom. What you should, huh? Yeah. By a Levaya, the Chevra Kedisha says, Leich b'shalom, go in peace, Leich al mishkavcha, etc. Huh? Tanuchu b'shalom. What you're really supposed to say, Leich l'shalom. L'shalom. Right. So of course we have a problem over here. Why does David say Leich b'shalom? By the way, I always forget. I pass it 1,000 times. What does the big sign say after the Binyanei HaUmah on the way out of Yerushalayim? You're not sure. I see it every time. Sa, I think it says Sa b'shalom, and Chazor, and then return to Yerushalayim. We're gonna have to look at it today. We're gonna have to take a look at it today. I don't know why. I have a suspicion that it's incorrect. It won't be the only sign the city has put up that's incorrect, but I think it's incorrect. So of course, why does he say Leich b'shalom? Now we had Leich b'shalom one other place earlier. We had Leich b'shalom one other place, two other places. Chapter 3, Pasuk 21. Oh, yeah. After Avner ben Ner comes to Hebron to make peace with David, so it says he made a meal for him, they made a covenant, and he told him Leich b'shalom. And what happened to Avner? Avner is cut down by Yoav ben Tzeruya. There is one other place. 29. Chapter 29:7 in Shmuel Aleph. V'ato shuv v'leich b'sholom v'lo tasero b'enei sarnei plishtim. This, and there was not bad. Achish, king of Gath, tells David to go
b'shalom. You know, David was getting ready to go fight against the Jewish people with Achish, king of Plishtim, and he tells him leich b'shalom. So one of the Mepharshim says that there really was never a difference between leich b'shalom and leich l'shalom. It's an insignificant difference. It's only after David says it first to Avner, and then to Avshalom, and those two stories end up as tragedies. It's only then, in other words, after the fact, the Leich B'Shalom becomes something that has an ominous meaning to it. Now, from the point of view of Dikduk, or whatever you want to call it, you know, the syntax, Leich B'Shalom and Leich L'Shalom are oto hadavar. It's only after these two times that Leich B'Shalom already becomes a something that is to be avoided. Now, there's something else that I noticed in one of the Pesukim, I want to take you back to that. It said that Avshalom would stop people who are on their way to the king. He would stop them and he'd say, where are you going? Where are you from? In Pasuk 2, it said, Vayomer Eimi Zeir Atokom, what city are you? Vayomer, and he would say, Me Achad Shiftei Yisrael Avdecha. That struck me as being strange. He doesn't say the response should have been what city he's from. But that's not the response. The response is, I am from one of the tribes. I am from one of the tribes of Israel. What is it that disturbs me about that? Or what is it that, what is this telling me? What it's telling me is that even after all of the years that David is king, the tribal divisions have not yet disappeared. It means that the Klal Yisrael will still have to wait a little bit more until they're going to be able to build a Bet HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, because the Bet HaMikdash in Yerushalayim can only be built by a people where the tribal divisions have disappeared completely. And if anything, he's Avshalom senses this, and he's going to use it. In other words, there is not yet a completely unified people. That's the life work of David. And it hasn't been accomplished yet. Maybe in great measure or not, but it hasn't been accomplished yet. And he's going to pick up on that. Vayochem, let's go further. Vayochem vayelech Hebrona. Vayishlach Avshalom miraglim b'chol shiftei Yisrael. Watch a plan of rebellion. A terrible, terrible, tragic rebellion. Avshalom had sent miraglim b'chol shiftei Yisrael. Lamar, he sent spies throughout all of the tribes of Israel. Now you see why I picked up on Shiftei Yisrael. Where does he send them? It doesn't say that he sends them to all of the cities of Israel. He realizes that there are still divisions. In other words, the smart politician or the conniving evil politician is the one that's going to focus in on the weakest link of the existing government. And you go in after that with a passion. Shiftei Yisrael. There are still divisions. Lema is saying, Kishom Achemet, call Ashofa, when you're going to hear the sound of the shofar, the Amartan, you should say, Malach Avshalom Bechevron. He has created cells. Do you understand? Do you know how much work was involved in this? It was years of work. He has created cells in all of the main population centers of Eretz Yisrael. They're all going to be waiting for the moment, most probably at the moment that the sound of the shofar will be heard in Hebron. He's going to have messengers or some means of notifying all of Israel, because he wants at one and the same time throughout all of Eretz Yisrael, they're all going to rise with the cry, Malach Avshalom. Do you know what kind of an organization he has to create for this? It's awesome. We try to get ourselves a few demonstrations going around the country at one and the same time. It's a tremendous job. He has agents all over. He has meraglim all over. Get Avshalom, and with Avshalom, halchum atayim ish miYerushalayim. 200 people went with him from Yerushalayim, kruim, who are invited, v'holchim l'tumam. What's fascinating, they're going innocently. They don't have a clue that there is a plot, and that they're going to be part of the plot. V'lo yadu kol davar, they knew nothing. V'yishlach Avshalom et Achitofel Hagiloni Yo'eitz David me'iro migilo v'zavcho et hazvachim. Avshalom sent Achitofel Hagiloni. Achitofel was from Gilo. Now there's a big machloket in the Mepharshim whether that's the Gilo that we know, and most of them say it's not the Gilo we know. The Gilo of Achitofel was someplace south of Hebron, and the Gilo that we know was given the name sort of, you know, after that Gilo, but it wasn't the, it's not the our Gilo. Avshalom sent to Achitophel, Hagiloni means the one from Gilo, who was Yoed David, the he was the advisor of David. According to Farshim, it seems that he wanted to get him out of his city in Gilo so that David should not be able to get Achitophel at the moment that he wants. He wants Achitophel out of the way. He wants Achitophel out of David's reach. And we're going to see later how important this is going to be. So then it's far from Yerushalayim, but he doesn't want Achitophel to be in a place that if David needs him, he knows precisely where to get him. So you send a rider, so it takes a few hours till you get to Gilo and you get Achitophel. He wants him out of his city in Gilo. While he, Avshalom, is bringing the sacrifices. The kesher, the conspiracy, was strong. And the people who were with Avshalom began to grow and grow with watching a movement grow before our very eyes. He has his agents all over. Do you know why those agents were called Meraglim? I have a feeling those agents whom he has sent, the whole shift that you saw, are called Meraglim because they were the first guys to take a seker, a pole. Meraglim are, what's the purpose of Meraglim? Meraglim are the ones who are supposed to reveal or discover weaknesses. One can be a meragel who comes to spy out a land and see its weak spots, from where it can be attacked. And there's a meragel who looks for the weaknesses in the government. What he's really doing is taking a poll. And you know what he finds out from this poll? That there are people, a large number of people, who will follow Avshalom against David. What I'm still, and this I'm going to have to leave with you as well, why are the people ready to follow Avshalom? Was David was a bad king? Why are they ready to follow Avshalom? Alright, so we know Avshalom, okay, yes, a certain percentage of the people are going to follow the charismatic leader, the good looking, you know, the Bibi of old. Of course, that's going to be the problem. David was also a charismatic leader. Is it that, you know, so, all right, according to the Pshat that says that it's 40 years since David has been appointed king, you know, he's old already. It's not the same thing. What are you talking about? Huh? Time for a change. And he's cashing in on the idea of time for a change. What did David do for me lately? Yes, well, you're telling me stories that he waged war for the Jewish people 10 years ago, 15 years ago. No, so he was a Rabbat Khan 15, 20 years ago, so what? What's he done for me? What's he done for me lately? I mean, there are so many weaknesses that begin to appear before our very eyes over here. The weakness of people. And the fact that you can fool many of the people a lot of the time. I mean, people are ready to fall for it. Is it also possible that, you know, people, it's a new generation, it's a young generation. And he's appealing to the people in their 20s and their 30s who don't remember anymore what David did 40 years ago and 30 years ago. They weren't even born when David was giving his life for Kleinism. There are all sorts of things over here that I, you know, in the final analysis, what did I say at the beginning of this year? At the beginning of this year, we said that people are operating, all of these stories are operating on two levels. On one level, it's human beings who are operating, and that's what we're trying to find out. On another level, there's a Rabbeinu Shalom over here who is bringing all of these forces together in order another punishment to David. Vayavo Hamagid El David Lamar, Hamagid, the one who comes to tell. In other words, David is not completely out in the in the dark. The one who comes to tell him, Hoya Lev Ish Yisrael Acharei Avshalom. The heart of the people of Israel are after Avshalom. He also has somebody who's taking scouting, who's taking a poll. And the poll is that the people are with Avshalom. Vayom David l'chalavadam asher itob Yerushalayim kumu v'nivrocha ki loti alanu pleito mipnei Avshalom. Listen to a pasuk that a father says. David said to all of the servants who are with him in Yerushalayim, let us get up and flee because we will not lo tialonu Plato, we will have no escape. Mipnei Avshalom, from before Avshalom. Maharu lalachet, hurry to go. Pen yemaher, lest he hurry. Vehi siganu, and he will catch up to us. Vehi diach olenu, and he will bring upon us at harah. Vehi kaha il v'karav, he will smite the city by the sword. Do you hear what the father is saying? He knows that his son is capable of doing this. He'll destroy us all. The servants of the king said to the king, whatever my master the king chooses, we are your servants. We will do whatever it is that you want. The king and all of his house went out by foot. The king left behind 10 wives to watch the house. The king and all of the people went out by foot. This is the second time that by foot is being said. What is it? Why are they? Right? Don't they have? What are the? Very good. That's the question that's bothered. They don't have donkeys, and they don't have horses, and they don't have chariots. Right. And then by Ya'amdu Beit HaMerchak, they stopped at Beit HaMerchak. Beit HaMerchak is the furthest house at the end of Yerushalayim. In other words, they're going to wait over there. He's going to gather. He's pushing, fleeing. He's preparing to flee Yerushalayim. I mean, this is so painful. V'chol avodav ovrim al yado, all of his servants are passing by him. In other words, they're all gathering. V'chol ha-kreti, v'chol ha-pleti, the kreti and the pleti. We'll talk next week about the kreti and the pleti. V'chol ha-gitim, the Gitim, 600 men, Ashebo Biraglo, who came by foot, Migat. In other words, he had people who were foreigners to Klal Yisrael, who were devoted and loyal to David. All of them are passing before the king. The king said to Itai Hagiti, why are you going to go with us as well? Shuv v'shev im Hamelech. Return and stay with the king. Who does he mean? Im Avshalom, Rashi says. David is already referring to Avshalom as the king. King Nachri atol, because you're a foreigner. V'gam gola atol limikomecha. And wherever you go, you're sort of in exile. We're going to see what all of this means. He really wants somebody to remain behind, who is going to be his eyes and ears. T'mol ba'achol, you see, because you've already come, you already left your home in order to come here. Now you're going to go with me, and you're going to continue journeying into exile. T'mol ba'achol, it's only yesterday that you came, ba'ayom aniyacha, now I'm going to move you, imanu lalecha, to go, v'ani holech, al asher ani holech, I'm going where I'm going. I don't even know where I'm going. I don't know where this is all going to end. Shuv. Go and return with your brothers with you, so you should be able to do for me chesed v'emes, kindness and truth. Itai answered the king and he said, Chai Hashem v'chei Adoni HaMelech, I swear by God and I swear by my master the king, ki im b'mekom asher yiyasham Adoni HaMelech, only in the place where my master the king will be, im l'mavet im l'chaim, for death or for life, ki sham yiyavdecha, that's where your servant is going to be. Vayom David el Itai, Leich v'avor, David said to Itai, go and pass. In other words, he's now granting for him permission to join the entourage of the king that is fleeing. V'yavor, Itai Hagiti v'chol anoshev, Itai Hagiti and all of his people, v'chol atap ha-shereto and all of the children. V'chol ha-orez bochim kol gadol, and the entire land crying a great cry. V'chol ha-om over him, and all of the people are passing. I mean, Mamish, it's I don't know, the picture that I have before myself, you know, Jews leaving Anatevka. Here it is, David HaMelech, toward the end of his life, he has to flee Yerushalayim from before his own son. V'chol ha'om ovrim, and all of the people are passing. Remember, David had said that if we don't flee from here, nothing will remain, because Avshalom is going to destroy the city by the sword. He knows Avshalom very well. And here the king is fleeing. V'chol ha'aretz bochim kol gadol, v'chol ha'om ovrim v'hamelech, Over by Nahal Kidron. I left out that part. Nahal Kidron. Where's Nahal Kidron? No. Huh? Nahal Kidron is right behind, just east of the old city, between the old city. Between the old city and Hazazin. They're crossing Nahal Kidron, and he says they're on the way to the desert, Midbar Yehuda. You ever stood up on Har Tzofim by the university? What do you see when you look out from the university? You see the Midbar Yehuda. They're on their way to Midbar Yehuda. V'hine gam Tzadok, v'chol ha-Levim ito, Tzadok and all of the Levim with him, no simat aron b'rit olakim, they're carrying the aron b'rit olakim, v'yatziku et aron olakim, they put down the aron olakim, v'yal ev'yatar, and as Yatar, the current comes atom kol ha'om la'avor min o'ir, until the entire people empty out of a city. People empty out of a city. All right, there are a lot of painful things. You know what I would suggest you do? Try and finish chapter 15 till next week, and I'm going to see how much I can do of Meded Avshalom, but like it. You have to feel the pain and that. All right, to be continued. Okay.